Te presentamos a Laura. Laura tiene muchos roles en su familia.
Mamá, esposa, maestra.
Y para prepararse para todos esos roles, Laura va a su Walmart.
Chofer, nutricionista, especialista en logística.
Ahí consigue vitaminas y medicinas para toda la familia.
Enfermera, doctora, paramédico.
Y ya que está ahí, también compra todos los ingredientes para la cena.
Chef personal, pastelera, malabarista.
Walmart tiene medicinas para la salud y bienestar de toda tu familia a precios bajos.
Consentidora, consejera, actriz de voz.
Bienvenido
contable.
A tu tienda para todo. Bienvenido a tu Walmart.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel. He's up at the top there, and also joined by the coach, Bob Shipley, former high school football coach at Rotan, Brownwood, Belton, Capel, also Burnett, also was a college football player at Abilene Christian, coached there in multiple stints, and was on the staff at Texas for 5 different seasons and served multiple roles there as well. He's the coach, Bob Shipley. What's going on, coach?
What's up?
By the way, boom, you can catch it right there.
You
don't want to find out what he's up to these days. That's how you do it. Hey, coach, a little birdie told me, because there have been a lot of requests, all right, people want to, they want these Shipley Ranches hats. I can't help them out. There have been some little birdies that told me y'all might be trying to work something out so folks can get some Shipley Ranches merchandise.
We're trying to the On Texas Football store.
Woo-wee. Yeah, I like that. I like that. All right, see? I know people have been asking about it. Hey, coach, all I do is wear the hat, and people, you see the, oh, hey, man, what can I get me a Shipley Ranch's hat? It's like, listen, I can't afford a ranch. I'll throw that into the little goodie basket when folks buy a ranch from Shipley Ranch. I cannot afford a ranch, folks. Trust me. My NFL career was not that good, and I was pre-NIL world. Nate, now some of these youngsters, they might be able to afford a ranch pretty soon.
No kidding.
They save their money the right way. All right. Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate it. See, there you go. Boom. There you go. You got more people. They want that Shipley Ranches merchandise.
You see, I got so many of them. I don't wear one.
Yeah, coach. Hey, I will say that. Hey, I've been trying to. I didn't want to wear them out, but I've been trying to wear them more and more. And you know, I've been getting compliments. And I will say, people want to know, hey, is that the Shipley? And I'm like, yeah, that's, people always ask me, go, is that the Shipley? So I'm like, yeah, that's the Shipley. Yeah. And I ain't talking about Shipley donuts, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I ain't talking about donuts.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the Shipley. No doubt. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. All right. So we got a lot to get into the show. We're always talking Texas football. There was a report from The Athletic. Blake Monroe actually had it up too on his Twitter talking about Quinn Ewers. And I want to get into that a little bit. I think it's interesting. I don't even know why Big 12 coaches are still talking about Quinn Ewers, but hey, man, it makes our job easier. But I want to get into the comments that were made about Quinn Ewers and get you guys' thoughts. ESPN, they had a really interesting listing of just what they thought 100 days leading up to college football were the best games, storylines, kind of marquee headline items of the upcoming season. And man, it's crazy how often the Longhorns are mentioned in that listing. So I want to maybe get to that if we have some time coming up a little bit later on. There's also everybody's real hyped up about the EA Sports video game. We've talked about Quinn Ewers. I'm assuming, and I don't know this for a fact. This is a question. Because I want to talk about the video game a little bit. And not, coach, we're not talking about playing the video game. So I don't go to be like, I'm dialing. I'm tuning y'all out. That's not what we're talking about. Because I want to talk about basically the highest rated players in the video game. Because that's basically the best players. Who EA Sports thinks is going to be the best players? What we haven't talked about is, first of all, is Quinn Ewers going to be the highest rated player on offense? He is on the cover. But I wonder if he's going to be the highest rated player on offense. And let that sink in for a second. And then I want to talk about who the highest rated player on defense is going to be on a video game. Because we haven't really talked about that on the defensive side. But I think it could be a number of different players. I want to get into that conversation with you guys a little bit. And I want to ask you a question. which position group do you think this year is going to overachieve? Meaning they're going to do more than expected. Which one of those position groups do you think is going to overachieve? We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show too. And if we have time, I do have a mini draft idea that I've informed the guys about if we have time. I'd like to address questions and then some of the hard hitting items, but there's a mini draft idea. Coach kind of brought it up on one of the previous Winning Drive show. I think it's appropriate considering who's on our show, and I think it'd be pretty fun. So we love mini drafts. So the idea is mini draft of the all-time greatest legacies in sports, in Texas sports history. All right. And this, it could be legacies of any kind. It could be in any sport. It could be obviously football is what is top of mind here. We're talking about legacies, any type of, you know, familial genealogy, right? Just related on any kind. Could be father, son, could be brother, could be mom, brother, could be, I don't know, your cousins, kinfolk, whatever it is. And that's the draft idea. The greatest of those, the greatest kind of family legacies and connections in Texas sports history. That's the idea. If we got some time, we'll throw out the mini draft of that. So the guys are worthy of it. I don't know who's going first. I always go last. I'll let CJ and Co sort out who's going to go first in that draft. Probably, you know, obviously fitting. Honestly, probably should be Coach. Just throwing it out there. If we're going to do family legacies, just throwing it out. Probably should be appropriate. Let Coach get the first draft. But, hey, y'all decide how y'all want to do it. All right. So we got a lot to get into on the show. I want to start out, though, because, and CJ, you were right about this. We talked about this on one of the other previous live streams. And I want to ask you guys a question. Texas won a record 15 Big 12 championships in the 23-24 calendar year. So 15 Big 12 championships. Coach, that is a conference record, by the way. And it's a record for Texas in terms of conference championships. And I believe, how many are there? 21 varsity sports, I believe it is. And they've won conference championships in 15 of them. Is this a golden era, CJ, of Texas sports? Are we embarking on one? Another one, I should say, because we've had a couple. But another one, do you see that? In terms of the overall excellence of the athletic department?
Yeah, it felt like Texas was getting close to that, obviously. Two straight back-to-back Director's Cups championships over Stanford, who had almost an entire decade worth of championships in a row. Well, Texas just went in and they were able to snag a couple in a row. I believe it was 3 out of 4 years, and then Stanford got one back a year ago. Now Texas right now projected to win it again this year. And Rod, this year it feels different, right? Last year, and you know, I think even Jonte Cook was the one that kind of stemmed the meme whenever you watch the videos and you see all these trophies, and then you see, oh yeah, they're just a bunch of swimming and diving trophies, right? You know, that was kind of the narrative. Texas was a great athletics program, but it was because of the other sports, and it wasn't football, and it wasn't baseball, and it wasn't basketball. Well, that's changed now. You know, Texas football just finished top four. Texas basketball back-to-back, solid runs in the playoffs as well. Women's basketball is the top 5 to 10 team in the entire country. Baseball's turned things together around a little bit as well this year, moving into the postseason where they just finished third in the Big 12. So no longer is it some of the smaller, less, you know, notable sports, you know, albeit very accomplished, not getting the headlines. You know, football's leading the way. And I think that's when you really start to understand what the magnitude of the Texas Athletics Department is when it leads from the front with football. So, listen, Texas baseball is going to have an opportunity to make some noise in this postseason run as well. I think that they've found it a little bit over the last 2 to 3 weeks. You know, that identity has been formed. There's, you know, kind of a scrappy football team that loves the long ball. And find me a chick that doesn't like the long ball, Coach, and I'll tell you what, that's a chick I don't want to be hanging out with. But they're all over this Texas baseball team because that's all they do is they hit dingers, and they're starting to win a lot of games right now. And there's no better time to find your rhythm and get hot than when you're going into the postseason. So Tuesday, 8:30 Eastern, whenever the Longhorns and Red Raiders kick off in Oklahoma City for that first round of the Texas or for the Big 12 postseason tournament, you're going to start seeing what this team is really built about moving into the postseason. I think that they're finding their groove, but all in all, the point is right now with all of these conference championships coming in, it's great. It's tremendous to have that tower lit as often as it is.
Yep.
But it's starting to be, you know, kind of led from the front. And that's with football. That's with basketball turning the corner. That's with baseball. It's not always the prettiest. We've seen those roller coasters throughout the regular season the last couple of years, but they find ways to get the job done to an extent, you know, of course, in the postseason.
Yeah, Coach, I don't think it's a coincidence either. I know Texas had a really big-time fundraiser this past weekend for NIL, for the Texas One Fund. By the way, TexasOneFund.org. Go check it out. Do your part. But I don't think it's a coincidence that Texas is embarking on this golden era of Texas sports and, you know, getting 15 Big 12 titles and also now being allowed to use the – one of the biggest donor bases and alumni bases in the world, and one of the most dedicated too. That's not a coincidence at all. Speaking of the Texas One Fund.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think that, you know, the fun thing about all this is we felt this brewing over the last two or three years, you know, just kind of like some programs changing the corner, namely football. But, you know, you got to give a shout out to CDC, you know, for the work he's done to put together an overall athletic department and the standards that he came in and set, which most people, you know, probably heard those and thought, yeah, that's not going to happen around here, the younger folks, because they haven't seen it happen. But those of us that have been around a while know the golden days of Longhorn sports. And, you know, is it too early? Yeah, it's probably a little too early to jump on that. But I certainly, everything to me points in the direction that we are reaching in the beginning of a really, really exciting time, an historic time for our overall athletic program. And honestly, we're going to need it. We need this momentum going into the SEC because, you know, SEC's is, you know, as good a baseball conference as anyone in the country, you know, so, and a lot of other sports too, obviously. So we're going to need it, but, you know, I don't want to say it's, you know, it's not the greatest era ever in the history of Texas Longhorn sports, but it's certainly, I'm hoping we're on the tip of something, the verge of something that's going to be really big for a long time.
Yeah, no, I agree. Feels like, you know, CJ mentioned Sark's building something with some longevity to it. It's got some staying power. And it seems like that's what CDC is. That's kind of the coaches that he has brought in. He's done a great job bringing in coaches who are program builders who kind of built these things from the ground up. And they look like they have some staying power to it. So they've done a great job. I think it's a combination of it all. It's a combination of CDC doing a great job. They got the Holy Trinity behind the scenes, Kevin Eltife, Jay Hartzell, CDC, as Mac and the late great DKR, you say BB's in the box. It's the same principle. Everybody's united on the same page, united behind the same vision. So that's a powerful force for Texas fans, and they know that. All right. I do think that, yeah, they could be embarking on something special, but we'll see. You're about to hit hit reality, the highest level of competition in the SEC. We think Texas is up to the task in all sports, but obviously that remains to be seen. All right. Let's get to this Quinn Ewers story. It's not a Quinn Ewers story, but there are statements about Quinn Ewers from this story over at The Athletic. And it's I'll give Blake Monroe credit over at On Texas Football because Blake does a great job following a lot of random stories. He's worth a follow via Twitter at Blake Monroe, OTF. And he put out this quote about Quinn Ewers from some anonymous Big 12 coaches. And one said, gentlemen, a DB coach who played Texas last year said, I'm not that high on him. Overhyped. He has a good arm and he did have a lot of talent around him, but you just see a bunch of stuff where you wonder what he's doing out there. Another veteran Big 12 assistant said, I think he's just still trying to figure things out. Sark does a good job of setting things up for him. And so you'll see times where he'll rip it, but then there are other times he just seems to be a little timid. A Big 12 defensive assistant said, I'm very curious to watch him this year. The last 2 years, he had superstars around him, There are some oh my God throws on film that he made against Alabama, but he was just so inconsistent. I think he's about average athletically. And then there's a Big 12 defensive coordinator that said, I do think he's come a long way from 2022. There was too much of the Mahomes comparisons around him coming into college. He does have a good arm, but he's not anywhere near as athletic nor the playmaker Mahomes is or has that kind of presence. It's kind of a strange deal because people want to talk about that, about what he was supposed to be, or they want to talk about Arch Manning behind him, but that isn't the kid's fault. So I don't remember the Patrick Mahomes comparisons. Maybe I'm off there, but you remember those, Coach? I don't remember those.
No,
I don't.
Never heard that once.
Yeah, I don't know about that. That's a little far off. But what are your thoughts? It seems like obviously these anonymous coaches in the Big 12, Texas former conference, unimpressed, Coach, by Quinn Ewers. What are your thoughts? You think this is just sour grapes? Think just being some haters? Well, you think it's these guys, you know, maybe are giving a genuine, honest critique of Quinn Ewers?
You know, I think some of that's fair, what they said. I don't look at Quinn and see outstanding athletic ability. I mean, you know, a great athlete. I think he's certainly a good athlete. He's not, you know, but I've never heard anybody compare him to Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
But Patrick Mahomes is a great all-around athlete, and you could tell he's a great athlete. I've never heard Quinn being described as a great all-around athlete. I think he does have a strong arm, probably not the strongest arm. He has a strong arm, but what makes Quinn is what's between the ears. You know, his competitive drive, his leadership skills, although he's not a real verbal guy, you know, his confidence that he has in himself, in the coaching staff, and in the players around him. You put all those things together, and you've got one of the top quarterbacks in the country. Now, you know, how you can come in and say that he's, you know, I could say he's average. He's average athletically in terms of college quarterbacks, Division I quarterbacks, Power 5 quarterbacks. Yeah, I'll give you that. But don't come in here and say he's an average quarterback, because he's anything but average in my mind.
Yeah, no, this the first one said he was overhyped, to be fair. He said he was overhyped, and he said he wasn't that high on him. The second quote here said, and I think this is where you're getting that, Coach, that some of it was fair, said, I think he's just still trying to figure things out. Sark does a good job of setting things up for him. There are other times he seems a little bit timid. The other coach said, I'm very curious to watch him this year. There's some oh my God throws. I think he's average athletically. You can make the argument that's fair. The Mahomes stuff, I don't know. That quote, I have no idea where he got that from. That shit, that seems like a hater. Seems like there were a couple of them that were trying to be fair. One that's just a straight obvious hater. And the guy that says he's overhyped, you know, I mean, that's if you want to make that argument, he's overhyped. You can make the argument that Elvis Presley is overhyped if you want to. You can make that argument. I believe I've made that argument. Not saying he's bad. Just saying, to say he's the king of rock and roll would be a bit of a stretch. That's all. He's awesome, but is he the king of rock and roll? Same thing about Quinn. Quinn's awesome, but is he worth a perfect? Was he a perfect score? The recruiting rating, CJ. Maybe that's their argument that he would be a little overhyped when you talk about that. What are your thoughts, CJ?
Yeah, there's a few things. Obviously, if you know AJJ Sports, I liked your comment. If Quinn did it, the portal, all these guys would be, you know, basically given everything that they could to get him onto campus. There's not a Big 12 team in the entire conference last year that would not have traded their quarterback situation for Quinn Ewers. I think that's an absolute matter of fact. If there was one, it was probably Oklahoma, because they just don't like Texas, right? And they like their seventh-year quarterback, Dylan Gabriel. But by the way, if Quinn Ewers was in college this long, there's no reason to believe that he wouldn't be significantly better based off the arm talent, everything that goes into it as well. I wanted to say this because it's kind of funny. Of course, you see the quotes, and you know, the first quote I believe was, you know, sometimes you watch him and you wonder what he's doing. I would say he's distributing the football and doing it so very effectively, right? Completed about 69% of his passes last year, 4-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Did so after a year in which He was really playing his first, season of football in several years. He didn't play his final season in college. He didn't play at Ohio State his first year. Transfers to Texas, gets thrown in with a bad football team, is just getting his legs back under him. He's not the greatest athlete, I'll give you that. He's been working on his frame, his body, what that makeup is going to look like. We've watched him come in a little overweight, drop all that weight, and now trying to work back up to where it's all muscle, right? We've seen that body transformation, but at no point was he ever touted as, oh, he's a big-time dual threat guy. He's not. No one's claimed for him to be that. That rating and that hype was all generated because of his arm. And right now, if you want to critique the footwork, that's fine. But at the same time, if you're completing 70% of your passes and throwing 22 touchdowns and, six interceptions with 3,500 yards, that's not a bad year, especially when you got the first overall running back in your backfield with a five-star freshman, another guy who was the fastest guy in the entire world. So, yes, it is a big prove-it year for Quinn. I don't think for any Texas fans, but I do think that there are folks out there who say, yeah, you just had, a first-round wide receiver for 2 years. You had another go in the top 50, and then you had a tight end as well. Oh, and another wide receiver. I get that. He did have a good wide receiving corps, and I do understand that Steve Sarkisian is able to scheme up his offense very favorably for these quarterbacks. But let's not act like this is a bad quarterback in any sense of the word. Quinn Ewers is still the best quarterback Texas has had in a long, long time. And to that same point, there's a reason why he has the second shortest odds to win the Heisman from Vegas. Those folks tend to know a thing or two as well. I really like Quinn Ewers to come in this year, as we've talked about, and make the people around him better. Whereas a year ago, it might have been those guys uplifting him. Now Quinn's the older guy in the room. We've talked about his spring season, kind of having that more consistency. We've talked about the three C's. He's calm, he's confident, and he's, certainly coming in there with confidence as well. So I like it. I think this is all stuff where if you're Quinn Ewers and you want bulletin board material, coming in May 20th and seeing all this published everywhere, there's no better time to come out and say, all right, they're doubting me. That's fine. Time to go out and prove it in the fall, get a little bit better over the summer. But again, these coaches would take Quinn Ewers in a heartbeat. No doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm with you. It's like talking about the hot Hollywood starlet and saying she's not that hot, that she's mid. It's like, yeah, you can say that, but if she was right here and she was, down the hookup with you, you'd be all on board. And they want to talk about Quinn like that. I'm sure they would love to have that. He would be an upgrade over damn near any situation that any Big 12 coach would have. Ski Break here says he got the 1.000 rating. Tough to live up to that in terms of Quinn Ewers, who got the perfect, I believe the perfect recruiting rating as a quarterback. And he was the highest rated quarterback basically in the history of modern recruiting at one point, CJ, I believe. And there are a lot of expectations with that. 817, Mr. Talk Too Much says, so much has been expected of him. Never seen a guy with so much on his shoulders be so smooth and solid. I think he's handled it pretty well, too, especially now considering the Arch Manning thing behind him and what a circus that could potentially be. I think he and Arch have handled it really well. Sark has handled that really well. I was here at Texas when you had a quarterback competition / controversy. Those things can get crazy and out of hand. That was even prior to social media, so I can't even imagine what social media, the element it adds to that. So I think Quinn has handled it really well, the Arch Manning thing, and we know Arch has been straight class when it comes to that. So Ski Break says Quinn won the Big 12. Who was the last Texas QB to do that? I mean, you got to go back to Colt, right?
Brad, I think that's a good point. When you come in with the 1.00 rating, you're expected to do great things, right? You are heralded as one of the greatest high school recruits in the history of this industry. That's completely understandable. But at the same time, every five-star quarterback that doesn't win their conference championship in year two, where's the outrage about them? And it's one of those things where I do think Quinn being that quarterback, and Arch is certainly going to face this criticism as well, right? He's got the Manning last name. He's got a Longhorn on his chest. That's coming. It already is coming because he's not starting, right, as a freshman or as a sophomore coming in at Texas. For Quinn, it's very much the same. These coaches see Texas and they see Texas starting to win now. And instead of, and we can have the conversation about whether or not quarterbacks get too much blame when a team loses or they get too much praise when a team wins.
Yeah.
But you know, at the end of the day, Quinn did pretty well for a second-year starter, right? You know, I don't think winning your conference championship is frowned upon all of a sudden, and losing by 11 yards or whatever, by 6 points in the playoff game in which, listen, I didn't see Quinn fumbling the ball in the red zone or on his own 15. That wasn't Quinn, right? Quinn wasn't the one allowing 37 points on the back end. So there's, you know, a lot of reason to think Quinn was on the back end of some, you know, ricochet shots that weren't directed for him. And that just comes with the territory of being the quarterback at Texas, being the quarterback for the Cowboys, being the shortstop of the Yankees. You know, that comes with the territory. And Sarkisian has spoken about it before, where I'm the head coach at the University of Texas. Now, I understand no one outside of Texas in this locker room and this campus is necessarily rooting for us. I understand it. Comes with the part of being a college football athlete. But to the same point, you mentioned it earlier. Quinn's got it between the ears, right? He's as cool and calm as they come. And so I don't think it's going to phase him that much. And if anything, it'll just kind of drive him this offseason to prove these coaches, these personnel guys, a little incorrect.
Burnt Orange Horn says they must be bad, right? Defensive coaches to let such a mediocre quarterback beat them so badly. I think their argument would be, and I agree with you, by the way, Burnt Orange Horn, their argument would be, oh, it's a supporting cast around them. Sark's, you know, brilliant schemes offensively, and not just Quinn Ewers. That's why this is a big year for Quinn, because he's expected, as CJ mentioned, to uplift the talent around him. Even though he's got still elite talent around him, he's expected now to make those guys around him overachieve, basically to help them overachieve, to you know, basically for those guys to become weapons, and for the chemistry and all of the continuity between those guys to be as good as it was last year, maybe even better potentially because of the depth of the wide receiving core. That's going to be the lesson. All right, Vivek B here. Thank you, Vivek, for this question. Says Quinn has been good, but he has not been great or elite. What in high school made people think he's the best recruit ever? I believe it. And CJ, you let me know here, Coach. You could obviously chime in on this too. I think it was just the arm talent, because there's really not a throw that Quinn can't make on the football field. Now, there's a lot of other things that make up the composition of being a great quarterback, not just the golden arm. You know, you got to have a lot of other things. The way you process information as a quarterback, your pocket presence. Sark has talked about that, right? He wants Quinn to improve his pocket presence. He was asked about what does Quinn need to work on the most. He said pocket presence, right? The pocket science, being able to buy yourself time, being able to move in the pocket, create space in the pocket. That's something he's still working on, getting deeper into his progressions. That's something you got to work on as a quarterback, how you handle pressure. These are all things that I work on. But in terms of the raw material, I believe he got the ratings because if you just look at arm talent alone, there ain't a lot of quarterbacks that got arm talent like Quinn Ewers. And that's what it takes at quarterback, right, Coach, to, you know, to be a guy that has transcendent talent. Can you make all the throws?
Yeah, I think it's that. A lot of us know his high school coach, Riley Dodge. I worked with Riley for a little while, well, for one season, the season of 2013 with on Mac Brown's staff. And, it was his arm strength, but it's also the fact that he's very coachable, the fact that he's a hard worker, he studies film, he understands the game, you know, the way that he carries himself, he's a winner, you know, he is a winner. He's been a winner his whole life. I don't know that I'll have to agree with the last comment. I don't know that he, you know, could be categorized as elite, but I think at the end of this year, I think there's going to be some opinions changed about that as well. Because as CJ said, he stumbled in his first year, or maybe as you brought a bad team. I mean, he was on a bad team, hadn't played in a while. And you look at the steps he's taken every season. And then now that he's coming to what is probably going to be his final season as a Longhorn, I really think he'll be what we all think he can be and could be.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think the ceiling is high. He's obviously considered one of the top two quarterback prospects coming out in this draft. So the sky's the limit really for Quinn, and he's got a chance to prove it on the field this year, even up against the only quarterback that is considered to be a higher draftable prospect at the position than him, which would be Carson Beck over at Georgia. So it'll be interesting to see what materializes, but I think it's going to be a big year for Quinn. A lot of expectations should be high for Quinn. Offensive line coming back, him and Sark in that same system. He should know that system really well. He should have a intimate knowledge of that Sark system by now. And it'll be up to him to be the leader of this group, especially going forward, making sure all the receivers are on the same pace. They know the offense, the timing, the rhythm of the offense. We didn't really get a chance to see that in the spring. Nobody needed to see that in the spring, but going to be interesting to see exactly what that is going forward. All right, let's hit our sponsor real quick before we move on here, because I think we got a special guest coming up for us. Before we get to our very special guest on the show, let's thank one of our sponsors, Flat Creek Estate, for all of their support. We really appreciate them. Now, Flat Creek Estate folks, they've been raking in the awards. Flat Creek just won 11 awards in 30 days, including Double Gold Grand Reserve and Texas Grand Reserve at the Houston Rodeo. Flat Creek Estate Winery is raking in awards, and it's just a few minutes from the heart of Austin, Texas. Select bottles of the wines by Flat Creek Estate are now available at your local Specs, so now you can get a taste of what they're all about. Flat Creek Estate is also a gorgeous venue hosting events for the whole family all spring long. You can check out their website for wine tastings, chef dinners, and you can make a reservation to visit the property. And I visited the property. It is gorgeous, folks. So eat, drink, and be awesome at Flat Creek Estate. For more information, please visit flatcreekestate.com. That's flatcreekestate.com. And we appreciate Flat Creek Estate and all of their support. All right. We got a very special guest joining us right now. Joining us right now is future Lifetime Longhorn, Michael Kern from St. Thomas Aquinas, joining us right now. Ponder, how you doing, Michael? Thanks for the time, brother. We appreciate it.
Hey, good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's an honor.
No, man, it's an honor for to join us. Now, we got CJ here and Coach Bob Shipley, so they're going to join the conversation as well. But first of all, congratulations on all your accomplishments. Give us a little bit of insight into your recruitment here at the University of Texas and how you ended up in this position and chose Texas.
Yeah, for sure. So I was actually on my Duke visit when Coach Banks reached out to me. And we got on the call, and he said he was going to come down to St. Thomas and work me out, watch me punt. So he watched me punt before school one day. He liked what he saw. But then about a week later, he called me and he offered me. So that's how that went. And then I guess a week later, I decided to commit, basically. I mean, I hadn't even visited yet. So, but I mean, I think that was the place. I mean, I'm originally from New Mexico, and I'm kind of familiar with the area, but like, I love it over there. So.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Coach Banks, cause it, you know, we've seen him have a pretty significant, you know, fingerprint on the special teams at Texas. Obviously Ryan Sanborn a year ago was a big part of things for the Texas special forces unit, but you know, Coach Banks off the field, you know, great personality, fun guy to chat to. How quickly did it take for you to get kind of acclimated with what he was like off the field, but also talk about what it was about his track record that, you know, kind of allowed you to buy into his vision of you at Texas?
Yeah. So, he came to me with, he showed me all the schemes, the special team schemes. I mean, at my high school at St. Thomas, you know, it's pretty similar. So it fit. I mean, it's pretty similar all around the country. I mean, not much to punting schemes a whole lot, but I mean, the directional, the left, right, it fit in with me, staying in the pocket, not really rolling out like some Australian punters do. So that's not what I do. I just, you know, stay in the pocket, spiral, end of turnover punts. So, I mean, yeah, he's a really good coach. I mean, he brought me in. He was super friendly with my whole family, everyone. So, yeah.
Hey, Michael, let me ask you about field goal kicking too, because in high school you were a punter and kicker, right? Place kicker, yeah, as well. Do you miss it, or are you the emergency kicker here at Texas now? Is that the plan, or you just give it up cold turkey and now you're just gonna be a punter for the rest of your life? Is that it?
My sophomore year I did everything, and then my junior and senior year I did punting and kicking off. So I mean, I'm gonna stick to kickoffs as well. You know, hopefully compete for that job as well as punting, and then nice. Yeah, just basically just punting. I mean, I miss it a little bit. You know, it's not the biggest of deals, but I mean, I like punting. It's That's what I like. So
would you because I know in practice kickers, y'all kind of work to the side. Would you get into a kicking kind of competition with Bert Arvin? You think you could hold your own if you just got into a kicking competition, even in practice with him? Could you hold your own with Bert?
I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't think I even got to, in my high school career, I never even got to kicking off the ground. I always used a tee, so probably not. I mean, maybe back to 40, that's about it.
That's a nice that's a humble brag right there. Maybe back to 40. That's all right. Hey, coach, you got a little something for Mike?
Yeah, Michael. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. Congratulations. Your life's about to change for the better. Well, one of the things I want to ask you, being from Florida, how old were you when you moved from New Mexico to Florida?
I was in seventh grade, so 13 or 14.
Yeah. Okay. So what is before Coach Banks came in, what were your thought on Texas, and what is the feeling there in Florida? Obviously a great high school, state champs, and many times. I mean, how many state championships have y'all won?
I mean, we just won five in a row, but I think total is 15 or something like that. So
yeah, it's crazy. So obviously a lot of recruiters come through there, a lot of things like that. What was your thoughts, and maybe the thoughts in general, among your teammates and friends and stuff? You know, what's the reputation that Texas has had for you before you knew you were going to be recruited by them?
I mean, honestly, when I moved to Florida, I moved to Florida for opportunities for sports, basically. I mean, there's not a whole lot going on in New Mexico, unfortunately. So, I mean, I made a big decision to go to St. Thomas, and then, you know, seeing all these kids, you know, older than me, you know, they were good mentors and all that. You know, I see them getting offers every day, Power Five schools all the time, getting these offers. And it's like, it was super motivating to be around those kind of kids. And I mean, I never even thought about Texas, to be honest. Like, that's just such a big time program. I mean, I always had dream schools, but I mean, when Texas came in, it was pretty, like, wow. Like, it was really humbling. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot to it, but like, I was super excited when I got that offer. I mean, it was a dream come true. I mean, there are other schools I was talking to, you know, there's just nothing that I think can compete. And, you know, the history of that program is phenomenal. So,
yeah, that's big time stuff, of course, you know, and again, congratulations, Michael. I wanted to go back a little bit before the offers, before some of this recruiting noise, but when did you know that you had, you know, a pretty significant leg on you? You know, did you grow up, were you a soccer kid growing up, and you just, you know, kind of trend, you know, took that over and became a football kid? When did you start to specialize in punting and kicking? And then, I mean, were you just the biggest threat at recess at playing kickball all the time? What was going on there?
So, I mean, yeah, in Little League, I actually played a defensive end and tight end. I didn't always just kick, but yeah. So going into high school, I decided, yeah, I'm probably not gonna be able to compete with these St. Thomas kids at tight end and DN. You know, there's some big boys out there. But yeah. So ninth grade, I decided to stick to kicking. My dad kicked at New Mexico State, so he helped me a lot, you know, through the transition and everything. But probably my sophomore year, I was like, yeah, I have a chance at this. I mean, you know, it's a huge opportunity. It's a blessing to be where I'm at because, you know, specialists, not a whole lot of specialists get full scholarship offers anywhere. I mean, there's probably like five punters in the whole country in this class that went on. So, I mean, yeah, and then I had a great junior year. I think my recruitment kind of blew up there. After my junior year, I took a bunch of spring visits, and then, yeah, Texas came in, so.
You mentioned your dad there. I wanted to kind of double back a little bit because I know he was a ball player as well. What kind of, you know, career path did he have back in the day? And, you know, were you ever able to watch some of his film as well? I mean, what was going on there?
Yeah, so he played 2 years at a junior college in California, and then he went to New Mexico State. But yeah, I haven't actually seen any of his film, but, you know, VHS tape and all that. But but yeah, I mean, he was doing really well for himself. He had he wanted to go to the NFL, obviously. I mean, he's originally from Canada, so you know, that was a big dream for him. We went through some injuries and everything. He had some workouts with NFL teams, Arizona Cardinals, I believe. And then, I mean, I just don't think it ended up working out. So, yeah.
You're going to hurt Rob's feelings there with the VHS comment, I'm sure. around the same time.
No, CJ, CJ knew exactly where I was going. I was going to say, Michael, man, I'm a little disappointed because all of my highlights are on VHS. Unfortunately, yeah. I had to transfer them over. But Michael, I would ask you because we got a question from Thunderpup.
Hey,
I
think 16 millimeter says hello. 16 millimeter film says hello.
Yeah, you got to watch. Yeah, you got to watch.
Hey, Michael, back in my day, you had 16 millimeter film, and if you were going to get recruited, you had to send a film to the school that you wanted to recruit you, or they would request it, and nobody else could recruit you or at least look at that film until they gave it back. And sometimes they would keep it for weeks at a time so nobody else could recruit you, man. Wow. You got it so good nowadays.
Yeah. It's a long recruiting process then.
Yeah. Now they just got huddle. I didn't know what 16 millimeter was.
Yeah, exactly. Now they just got the huddle, man. They got it all in 4K. It's all good. All right. Hey, let me ask you about this, Mike, because it's an interesting question from Thunderpup here. He wants to know, did you play any other sports growing up? You said you played football, obviously, and played DN in your early years in football. Did you play any other sports? And also he wants to know, how does one become an elite punter? I think Thunderpup might have some kids or something that are interested.
Yeah, so, I mean, I played soccer my whole life. I mean, I gave that up kind of in eighth grade. I mean, I always played football, soccer, going from soccer practice to football practice, to going from a game on Saturday to a game at four for football. So, I mean, it was tight. So I had to give that up. I used to play basketball as well in middle school. I played for a middle school team in sixth grade. And then, yeah, I think those are the only three sports. I mean, I ran track for a little bit. I did hurdles. So
nice.
That's that. And then, to become an elite punter, I mean, I think it's a lot of work. I mean, you know, there's actually a lot behind punting and specialists. I mean, from an outside view, I think, you know, oh, how you're not making that field goal, how you're not punting the ball 50 yards. I mean, there's a lot. It's kind of like, it's pretty similar to golf, and you know, golf can be pretty a big struggle for some people, but
yeah.
It can be frustrating. But you know, just like an inch off of my drop, you know, it can cause a shank or a missed kick. Same thing for golf. You know, your swing, if you're off by a little bit, you know, you could slice it or whatever happens. So, I mean, it's a lot of practice. It's consistency. You know, knowing, being out there with someone that knows what they're doing, can coach you, I mean, helps a lot. My junior year, I mean, my dad never punted, so I kind of figured everything out, like, on my own. I mean, I watched a lot of videos with just punters, NFL punters, and you know, I went to some camps here and there, but that was about it. I mean, it's just you know, repetition, because punting is about consistency. So
yeah,
you mentioned the other sports that you played. Can we count on you for some fake punt throws? You got an arm on you as well. I mean,
actually,
those are the fun highlights as punters, right?
Yeah, we were gonna run a fake punt in the state championship game. I was gonna throw it to one of my receivers, but we never ended up doing it, but I could throw it about like 55 yards.
Oh,
yeah! All right,
yeah, that's legit.
But here's the most important question: conference championship. You let off a booming 50-yard punt. Somehow the dude miraculously gets through everybody and heads down the sideline, the same sideline you're standing on. It's you and him for the conference championship. What's going to happen, Michael?
I'm throwing my body at that guy. I mean,
yeah, baby.
I like that. That's right answer. Right answer. Yep, no doubt about that. Hey, I want to ask you this. I know, and we'll let you go because thank you for joining us, Mike. Because I know you got a lot of stuff going on, so we appreciate the time. But do you watch film? Do punters watch film?
Yeah, we do. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can watch, but yeah, we do. I mean, at St. Thomas, we'd probably watch like once a week, but it's just. I mean, in high school, we didn't have a whole lot of the, you know, the capabilities to watch a lot of film. But
yeah,
I mean, in college, I'm sure they're gonna be watching film. They go over it a lot in special teams meetings, but especially in the positional meetings. So, I mean, yeah, you do, but it gets to a point like, how much can you watch? So
yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was like, I wonder how much there is for a punter. All right, you guys have anything before we let Michael go?
I've got one more, and this will be my last one, Michael. Thank you again for joining us, of course. But I got to talk with you just briefly in San Antonio. You're an All-American Bowl All-American. You know, there's a number of Longhorns down there as well, and obviously you'll be moving up the campus in early June. But I just wanted to ask you, you know, how are you preparing to come into college? I know that's a big jump. Are you excited for it? Have you talked to any of the guys on campus right now to kind of ask what it's like? What are your thoughts there?
I mean, I'm super excited. Honestly, I'm not really too nervous at all. I mean, I'm 100% confident with my ability to come in, you know, and be the starting punter. So, but I mean, yeah, I've talked with a couple guys, Xavier, Ryan Wingo, the tight end, Jordan. I mean, they all say great things. I mean, they're all there together supporting each other as well. So, I mean, especially with the support system Texas has with everything. I mean, I think Texas has it all. I mean, it's all lined up for you. You just got to take advantage of your opportunities there, and I think you'll succeed. So,
nice. Hey, well, Michael, thank you very much for the time. Really appreciate it. Congratulations on everything. And best of luck to you, man. And hook 'em horns, brother.
All right, hook 'em. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
That is lifetime Longhorn Michael Kern, punter coming out of St. Thomas Aquinas in Florida. Yeah, that was a good job. That was a pleasant surprise. So I apologize for not promoting that interview earlier. I don't think we wanted to promote it unless we knew he was coming on, and I think they probably got confirmation late. So thank you.
I was wanting a little more. I was wanting, like, Coach, I'm gonna let the guts fly with the feathers, man.
He said he was going to throw his own body into him, Coach. That's all you can ask from a punter.
I want to know how many Division I punters were previously defensive ends.
There you go.
I'd like to know if Cameron Dicker was ever doing that. I know he punted a little bit at Lake Travis as well, but Michael Dixon, I can't imagine him ever putting his hand in the dirt and flying off the edge. But I'm excited for Michael Kern. Again, I was able to see him in San Antonio for the All-American Bowl that week of practice down in San Antonio. And, I mean, it speaks to why Texas has yet to add a grad transfer punter. I think he does have a very good leg on him. Obviously, he talked about wanting to come in and start right away as a true freshman. We'll see if that's the case. Obviously, All-American punters, you don't see them too often not having a quick impact. But I did if I have one last question with them, and this will be a fun conversation real quick, but Texas has that reputation as, you know, special teams you, right? You know, you look at all the success. I mean, Dicker, Tucker, Phil Dawson back in the day. I mean, Michael Dixon, even the returnman, Devin Duvernay, an all-pro. Adrian Phillip has made a career solely off of special teams. It looks like Brendan Schooler is going to do the same. Now you're going to have some Keelan Robinson action in there as well. And Ryan Sanborn obviously being picked up as well from the Falcons. So I'm excited for that because this is the next era of what has made Texas, have some pretty sweet success in the NFL with, you know, kickers, punters, specialists. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it could be a huge advantage too because, Coach, the truth is a lot of teams just don't have the depth to have great special teams either or they don't emphasize it enough. And you probably remember this, Coach, CJ won, because CJ's young. CJ's probably heard about it. But remember that North Carolina State game we had when I was at Texas and they blocked like three kicks?
Yep.
It was ugly. It was ugly, CJ. And
Rod, I remember the Oklahoma State game a few years. I think that was 2015.
Yeah, it was very similar. Yep, very similar situation. I think we had three kicks blocked. I want to say they was blocked by the same guy, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was Terrence Holt. Torrey Hope's little brother. Oh, man. And Matt, that changed Matt Brown, Texas football forever. After that, we devoted, I want to say we might have coached double the amount of periods at practice that we devoted to special teams after that. I think Matt was so embarrassed and so ashamed of having that many kicks blocked. You're talking about just basic execution lacking at Texas, and it was an embarrassment for us, the players. So I know Matt was, and we doubled the amount of time we spent devoted to special teams and became, by the way, one of the most, I would say, most effective special teams units or phases in all of college football over the next decade at Texas for Mack Brown, Texas football. So it paid off, but it started at a really low point for Texas.
no doubt about that.
You've got to watch that. I mean, trust me, those opponents are watching film on every form of protection that you have, all your personnel. They see it. They'll go back and watch 2 or 3 years of guys blocking them. And if they find any way to expose a weakness, they will. That's why you have to be serious about it and be proactive about everything you're doing, special teams-wise, because all it takes is one guy. You know. Nowadays, I mean, you know, they'll go on there and grab guys and pull them out of the way and loop somebody underneath. You better have an answer for that, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right about that, Coach. And, I mean, is it possible, since we're talking special teams, might as well stick to it just for a minute here. Is it possible the special teams units are better this year than they were last year? Is this going to be potentially the best of the special? Now, you'll have Matthew Golden. Now, you're replacing Keelan Robinson. He was a guy that got drafted at the running back position, mostly because he was the best kickoff return specialist in this draft class. But Matthew Golden, as you know, CJ, and you've brought up several times, statistically is a more potent potential kickoff returner in a lot of ways. Silas Bolden is a really good punt returner. Now, he's not as good as Xavier Worthy, so I'm not going to throw that out there. But as long as he's not significantly worse than Xavier Worthy, maybe you'll get some, production that is at least close to what Xavier Worthy gave you. But he might have been the best punt returner in the country, too, to be honest. And you had great gunners and coverage teams. And Bert Auburn became an all-conference kicker for you late. He could be better. Is it possible that it could be a better special teams unit, CJ?
You know, if it is, it's because of the work that Jeff Banks does in my eyes. And that's no knock to the weapons that Texas added or currently possesses on the roster. But when you look at it, Rod, I mean, Xavier Worthy was not a natural punt returner. Like, he didn't return them in high school. We asked him why, one media availability. He goes, man, they're scary. What do you mean? Those guys are running at you full speed. There's 11 of them coming to tackle you. He's like, I didn't want to become a punt returner, but Coach Banks told me I go back there, return punts, and I can't tell him no. So that's kind of where it elevates to. I think because of that, there were some early growing pains, but at those same times, if you were able to go back and watch those big returns or the ones, and I know there, with Xavier Worthy specifically, there was a few punt returns last year where he was a shoestring away from breaking it. I think that there was 3 or 4 where he probably had 25, 30 yards on the return, and it was just the last – like, it's almost like he tripped on the 50-yard line, essentially.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is the blocking scheme, and that's not mentioned a lot when it comes to punt returners, but Texas has done a great job under Jeff Banks setting up blocks, understanding where the return is set to take place, and executing it. You know, that's been a big part of their success in their return game. I do think Silas Bolden's going to have a good time, a good season returning punts for Texas. Will he be as explosive? We'll have to see. I mean, Xavier Worthy was 4.21, right? He was the fastest player we've seen in the NFL Combine. But at the same time, he's had success at a Power 5 level prior to this. That's not the case with Xavier Worthy. So will there be maybe potential for more splash plays early than what we saw with Xavier? Perhaps. But at the same time, those big ceiling plays that we saw with X, hard to come by. On the flip side, I mean, we know that Trey Wisner and Gavin Holmes were the two gunners that Texas used in the spring. Those two starting gunners were very, very important for pinning teams back in their own, you know, end zone, in their own 15, 10-yard line, whatever it was. It was a big weapon for Texas. Keelan Robinson, Keaton Crawford, the two of them. It was hard, in my estimations, to find a more willing set of gunners and a more, you know, talented group than those two, what Texas had a year ago. So we'll see what those guys are. If we know anything about Gavin Holmes, you know, coming from the boot, he plays with the chip on his shoulder. He's willing to go out there and give it his all. And we already saw that a year ago with Trey Wisner, who's become, you know, in a sense, a fan favorite because of the efforts that he gave on kickoff and punt return in his own right. So I'm excited for it. But, man, that's going to be tough to come out and say right away that they're going to be a better unit than what we saw a year ago.
Yep. No, you're right. They'd be asking a lot, no question about it. But Jeff Banks has done a great job every year he's been here. He's not had a disappointing season yet as a coordinator of the special teams here at Texas. Here's an interesting question here, guys. William Niche wants to know, with Texas going to the SEC – and 12-team playoffs, is this coming season going to be the best ever for both Texas football fans and college football fans in general? Because you'll get that 12-team playoff. I'll say this about the buzz. I was reading an article over at ESPN. Thank you for the question, William Niche. And they listed basically the 10. They just had 10 I think it was 10 top 10 lists, actually, is what it was. Because 100 storylines, 10 top 10 lists. So they had the 10 best stories in college football. And one of them actually mentioned Arch Manning and Quinn, which is crazy. That was number 8 on the list. Makes no sense at all. But for the national headlines, I guess that's something they talk about. But number 1 was expanded playoffs. Like, that's the biggest story in college football this season, is that you have an expanded playoffs. And you have new teams that are going to new places. Of course, Texas going to the SEC. That was storyline number 2. New faces, new places. When they looked at the top 10 games in the 2024 season, Georgia at Texas was number 3 on this list. Texas at Texas A&M was number 9 on this list, actually. Number 1 was Georgia at Alabama. Number 2 was Michigan, Ohio State. But Texas, I believe, was one of the only programs that was mentioned twice on that list of top 10 games, 10 top 10 games to watch. When they talked about the most intriguing first-time conference matchups with all the newcomers to the Big Ten and to the SEC, Texas was number 1 and 2. Georgia at Texas, number 1. Texas at Texas A&M was number 2. So I don't know if it's going to be the best season ever for Texas fans, because Texas fans, you know, they've had some really good seasons before. You know, 05 was a great season. They knew they were going to be good 04 going into 05. Texas knew they was going to be good 08 going into 09, and that was a really good season. So they've had some really good seasons for Texas, but it is unlike any other season in the history of Texas football, because your first time going to the SEC, it's your first time going into the expanded college football playoff. And it's, you know, for Texas right now, for Texas fans, they can feel, coach, that there's some sustainability to this thing. This does not feel like 2018, where it surprised everybody that Texas was going to be good. This feels like, oh no, we knew Texas was going to be good. Last year, they were ahead of schedule. This was the year everybody predicted that they were actually going to make some, if things were going well, that they were going to make some real noise in their first year in the SEC potentially. And who knew that Nick Saban was going to retire? Nobody knew. That was just kind of a gimme for Texas as well. You got that thrown out there, so you don't have to worry about Nick Saban in the SEC. It does seem like it's unique. I don't know if it's the best season ever for Texas fans. It's unique because we've never, ever been here as a college football fan or a Texas fan.
Well, when you look at the way things have fallen into place, it's really good timing. Great. Really good timing for Texas. Now, go back and say this. We wouldn't have a lot of the athletes that we have on our roster right now had we not made the move to the SEC. Agreed? I mean, that's pretty mm-hmm. obvious.
Yep.
One of the reasons that we've been able to recruit at the level we've been recruiting at is because the brand that the SEC brings and what that means. You know you're going to be playing with the best. But it's just really, it's so hard to look back and imagine when you're thinking about a 12-team playoff. And what that could mean, it could be the most exciting season in the history of our program, especially if we win it all. But even the playoffs brings a whole new feeling. Can you imagine back when you played, Rod, and back even the BCS days? Can you imagine there's you just up some guys that are just going to vote, you know? And, you know, 2008, I felt like we should have played for the national championship and won it, honestly. But that was a year I think Oklahoma got just embarrassed by Florida, if I'm not mistaken, 2008. But when you look at that and you see, you don't even know till the end. And then when the last – I mean, you still don't know for sure where the cards are going to fall. But now we know if we have the season that we think we're going to have, we're going to be in the playoffs.
Yep.
You know, so you already have that anticipation building up. This could be the funnest season ever. I don't know about the greatest season. I think it's going to be the funnest season we've had in a long time. Guys, let me tell you, I've been to every stadium in the Big 12. And, Rod, you've been to most of them too, except for maybe the new ones that have come in. But, I mean, it ain't a lot of fun to go up into Morgantown. I mean, you know, it ain't – Ames is not a place that – you know, I mean, they just – you just look at our road trips. I mean, some pretty cool atmosphere, but it's just because there's nothing else to do in Morgantown. There's nothing else to do in Ames, you know. And then you look at going into the SEC. This, you have some of the greatest atmosphere in college football. And I'll say this, A&M has one of the greatest game day atmosphere in all of college football. I've always said that. What a cool place to watch a game, you know? Yeah. So all of that to me put together means this could be the funnest season that we've ever seen.
Coach, I see you don't like burning couches out in West Virginia, huh? That is for you? Come on. That's about as fun as it gets out there.
Got to find something to do. You got to find something to do out there, man. No doubt. But you're right, Coach. They don't take any of those trips this year, though, really, CJ. But in the future, they're going to take a lot of those really cool trips to the SEC.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a really fun time for anybody that's looking to make a trip. Make a road trip to go watch Texas play in a big game because, you know, it just means more now in the SEC. But you think about the places in which you'll get to go. You know, you'll get to go play in Death Valley, play in the Swamp. You know, Ole Miss has a fun atmosphere. Mississippi State under the lights when they have a good team. And I know it's kind of specific, but that team, I mean, that atmosphere when they get the Cowbells going under the lights, really cool. And, of course, you know, you won't see an empty seat in College Station or Fayetteville this year. That is for sure. And, of course, I know Vanderbilt football-wise probably won't give you the best atmosphere, but, hey, at least you're in Nashville. So that beats going up to Ames or Manhattan or Morgantown, you know, or, shoot, even Stillwater. So we'll give it that. I'm really excited for the SEC. And, of course, Coach, to your point as well, when you combine the first year in the new conference, in the best conference in all of college football, and then play the defending national champions week two, what more could you ask for when your team is also projected to be a top five team coming into the year? That's a lot of fun. I think I'm right there with you. It's not the most successful season for Texas. As long as the quarterback stays healthy and that team stays on the relative track, right, it's going to be really darn fun. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's so unique. We just haven't been here ever, and we won't ever be again. First year in the SEC, first time with that expanded college football playoff, and Longhorn fans know they're going to be real good. And you got margin for error now. Thank the Lord. I mean, it used to be, oh, man, you lose one game, you lose it at the wrong time in the season. Oh, your season's done. All your championship hopes dashed. Like, no, you got room for error now. You can lose a game early on, lose a game late, still have a chance to be one of the best 12 teams in the country and therefore get yourself into the college football playoff. So even though Longhorn fans don't want to think about that, that is a good thing for everybody involved. I got a question because I know we're getting close to the end of this thing. Trey Day here so in the chat says, hey, Rodney, you remember Terrell Dillon? He was a beast on the kickoff coverage and gunner. Yes, trust me. I loved I was on kickoff early on too. So I actually kind of, you know, sharpened my teeth, if you will, as a young player on kickoff. I was on kickoff with Corey Redding, was on kickoff with me back in the day. Big old Corey Redding, back when he was slim and trim and coming off that outside linebacker position. So I mean, I think that's what a lot of young guys. I used to love the kickoff back in the day. When I got to the NFL, I didn't love it so much because I had to be a wedge buster at times and try to split the wedge, which is not as smart. That's why they've now decided it's no longer legal. It's no longer a legal tactic to use in the NFL because guys were getting waylaid out there trying to run into the wedge. But I like running down on kickoffs. We had great players. Michael Unger was one of those players. Hell, at one point, that was a young, nasty Nate running down on kickoffs. They put some of the best players, and this is what Jeff Banks believes too, put some of your best athletes out there on the coverage units. And they do it with some of these young guys, you know, if you're not necessarily ready to contribute on the field right away because of whatever reason, fundamental development issues, you know, maybe you just haven't, you know, familiarized yourself with the playbook, could be, you know, processing, whatever it is. Anybody can go run down, straight down on a kickoff or a punt and go tackle somebody. As basic football, and you can kind of see young guys who just want to contribute out there early on, and we saw a lot of it from guys last year. George here, George Lopez. Thank you very much for the super chat. He says, great content as always, Hook 'em Horns. Which room needs to make the most improvement for Texas to reach our goals? Oh, I'm going to throw this out there to you first, Coach. Great question from George. Thank you, George, for the super chat. Very kind of you. What position group, what position room needs to make the most improvement for Texas to reach their goals?
Well, Rod, your old homeboys in the secondary. in my opinion, I mean, heck, they're all so critically important, but you know, so to me, the question could be, what group were you most disappointed in last season? It's the same question.
Yeah,
the defensive backfield. you know. But if you say which one needs to see improvement, or the question could be who, what group will see the biggest improvement? To me, it's the same. It's the same answer. However you want to do it. They're no dummies. They know they didn't live up to DBU. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's going to be the secondary, in my opinion.
Yep. CJ, what are your thoughts?
I like secondary. And, you know, for all the reasons Coach just mentioned, I'll go a different direction because I think it's going to help them out a lot. I think it's going to be the edge room that will see the most improvement. Of course, you talk about the bodies in that room. There are a few positions where there are so many talented bodies that just kind of projecting what it will look like on Saturday, week one or week two, I think it's pretty difficult, right? What will that rotation at receiver look like? What will that rotation at defensive back look like? Edge is the same way, where you probably have six guys right now. You have your two returning starters. You got a five-star freshman in, coming in who was, you know, one of the highest rated defensive prospects Texas assigned, and however, you know, whoever knows, but Trey Moore comes in with 20 and a half sacks over the last 2 years. And now Colton Vosick looks like he's going to be a guy that contributes, as well as Justice Finkley as well. So there's six guys, and to know who's going to be that first set coming into that defensive group, that's going to be interesting. You know, is it Trey Moore, a guy who's come in all business with 22 and a half sacks after seeing Baron Sorrell and Ethan Burke start the last 2 years? You know, that's not an easy thing to do. It's just walk in, transfer, and uproot, you know, the incumbent at the position, right? That's not an easy thing to do. But I do think that you have a lot more talent in that room than you've ever seen under Steve Sarkisian. And as a result, getting more pressure on the quarterback should help your DBs in the back end. But what does that group look like? You know, can they continue to get pressure after the quarterback, which they've done a great job at the last two seasons? They've been tremendous at getting pressure on the quarterback, but they've not been good at getting that quarterback down on the ground, and they've not been good at creating false plays by that defensive end spot. So I'm looking at them, and I think as a result, you'll see, you know, you'll see some of the burden, you know, kind of lightened up on by that interior group, and obviously the safeties in the back.
Yeah, you guys know I want to say secondary, but I'm just going to – Coach already went there. I'm not even going to, you know, I'm not even going to beat that dead horse. I've been talking about that all season. So I'll go to a different – I'll go – since Sark is not worried about the secondary in the pass defense, I'll go with what Sark brought up. Sark said, you know, the defensive tackle position. That's why he brought in three defensive tackles via the transfer portal. And only one of those guys, as you brought up, CJ, and you talked about it, and you illustrated with one of your graphics, I thought was really cool, too, that you put in one of your articles. You know, you only got one of those guys, Bill Norton, that really got some experience playing over that, over the center, the nose tackle position, and that 0-1 technique. And that would be Bill Norton. He's the only one that has a lot of experience. The other guys can do it. They can money ball it. But he's a guy that's got a lot of experience. And I am worried about the Michigan game, the Georgia game, and the Kentucky game. Those are teams that have proven, at least in recent history, they can play some bully ball. Hardball ball is bully ball. And Michigan is going to be the most talented team Texas plays if you just kind of look at projected tons of projected draft picks from that team, from that roster right now. And most of those on defense. But Georgia's been stockpiling their team. They're also one of the top three to four most talented teams in the country as well. And they can play power football. They can run power schemes, gap schemes against Texas. And I think that if teams can do that to you, not only will they be able to, you know, kind of beat Texas by running the football down their throat 3 yards in a cloud of dust, but they'll be able to maintain the football, play keep away from Sark's offense, and that's really how you beat Texas. Just don't allow that potent, prolific offense to have the football. And I think there are three teams on that schedule that can do it, and it's Michigan, Georgia, and it's Kentucky. I don't think the rest – I mean, maybe the Aggies can do it. We'll see. Maybe the Aggies are in that conversation as well, so we should be worried about them too. But they're, as I said, they're – 3 to 4 teams on your schedule in the SEC and on that schedule next year that can play bully ball against you. And if you don't have the big humans up front, and Sark knows this, you're going to be in trouble potentially with that schedule coming up. So, George Lopez, good question there. Like I said, could have went secondary. I'll go D tackles. But those are two positions. I was going to ask, you know, what position do you expect to overachieve next season? And I think we kind of answered it there too. if we're being optimistic, we expect those positions to kind of overachieve for Texas to do really well there. All right, before we get out of here, we'll answer a couple more questions, but let's thank one of our sponsors, another one of our sponsors, the folks over at South Point Dodge. Really excited about having them on the team and really excited about them sponsoring the Winning Drive. So Texas football fans, you can score an easy point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock today, and their award-winning sales staff, they don't play games, folks, and they're not about gimmicks. They're about getting to the point, right to the point, straight to the point, by getting you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. You can go see them off I-35 in South Austin or visit them today at southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point Dodge. So we appreciate South Point Dodge and all of their support. A couple of questions for you, CJ, here. Five Adam wants to know, who is the leader for QB Keelan Russell?
Yeah, yeah, that's a great question. I know Texas has been in communication, obviously. Right now, no offer had been extended following the spring, visit contact window as well. So who's going to be involved? It's going to be Ole Miss, Oregon, Alabama. Right now, Jerry put up a great note the other day. Alabama looks like the team that's going to end up in a very good position to land him if Texas does not offer and eventually pursue. Right now, we've still yet to see Texas extend that offer. They're still holding firm with K.J. Lacy, the quarterback commit out of Saraland, Alabama. So, interestingly enough, the quarterback out of Alabama committed to Texas, the quarterback out of Texas, might end up at Alabama. So that's might end up what might be the case at the end of the day. We'll see. But again, until Texas extends that offer, I don't see Texas making any movement in that quarterback room for the time being.
Yeah. Good stuff there. How about this one? 817 Mr. Talk Too Much says the wide receiver room is the room we need to worry about the most. We got talent, but can we be consistent? He's, you know what, 817 Mr. Talk Too Much is not crazy there. When Sark was asked by Josh Pate, coach, about, you know, what concerns him the most on defense, he said D tackle, which obviously seems pretty predictable. He's been consistent about that. But on offense, he did say wide receivers and the chemistry with the wide receivers, that is something he is concerned about. What are your thoughts about that, coach? Should we be expressing more concern? We brag about the depth and talent at wide receiver. That's obvious. They've been productive other places they've been, but the sum of its parts, when it's brought all together, you know, there's got to be cohesion there. Is that something that we're not, obviously we're not paying enough attention to?
I think that's a very valid point. As a matter of fact, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the hype of the replacements that are coming in, and you just think, oh, well, yeah, those guys will just plug and play. Well, I mean, we'll just stick somebody else in there and you know, we'll have the same results. And man, that cohesion you're talking about is really, really huge. And it has so much to do with the personality and the makeup of each individual player. All it takes is one or two selfish players in there to blow up the whole room. You know, obviously we had a great receiver room last year, that the culture of that room was awesome. And I think that worries me a little bit for Sark to say that, because I'm wondering maybe if they're not gelling the way that he thought they were going to gel, either with each other or with the quarterbacks or whatever it is that he's, I mean, we got the guy that can get him the ball. We've got an offensive line that, you know, we think could win the Joe Moore Award next year. They're going to be able to give us some protection, but that room is going to have to gel and come together. I have confidence in our staff. They've done it before with new guys, and they can do it again. But whether it happens or not, I think that's a valid point.
Yeah. No, I've heard, like I said, I've heard Sark talk about it, and when Sark brought it up, it intrigued me a little bit, and I thought, okay, maybe that's something we should pay more attention to. So thank you for the Hook'em from Oklahoma podcast. Thank you from Hook'em from Oklahoma says, Hook'em from Greenwood, Arkansas. We appreciate that. Do you guys expect Texas to win at least 10 games the first year in the SEC? I do. The Vegas Wise guys do as well. So we'll blame Vegas for this, CJ, right? Don't Vegas have Texas at 10.5, I believe, is the number?
10.5. Hey, he's going to have to change that name if he's coming in from Arkansas. I was a little confused.
I don't know what I'm just reading it as I see it. You're right.
I think you have the potential for four toss-up games, and bear with me here this year. Obviously, Michigan, toss-up, you're on the road. Georgia at home, toss-up. Oklahoma and Dallas, always a toss-up. But I think at the end of the day and the end of the season, you're also going to have a toss-up with Texas A&M. And that's not to say that Texas is going to disappoint and play lower than what they're expected, but you're going into what will be the most hostile environment any team will play in the entire season. I don't have much, hesitancy in saying that. You know, this rivalry is coming back. It's going to be at their place. They're expecting to play spoiler. Will they be in contention for a playoff spot? They could be. I'm not expecting them to be. But at that point in the year, their job is to keep Texas out of the playoff or to at least ruin their seeding, right? You know, that's kind of how things are going to be looking like for Texas A&M. So I see four toss-up games at the moment for Texas. Of course, it never goes as easy as it plans on paper ahead of time, but if you go 50-50 in that, those four games, you split Michigan and Georgia and you split Oklahoma and A&M, whatever the combination is, you're sitting at 10 wins. If you find a way to win two of those games, and I think Texas is going to be favored in Dallas, they're going to be favored in College Station. If those two games are the ones that you win, you're sitting at 10 games, walking in at 10-2, losing to the defending national champions and the number one team in the country for the college football playoff. I still think that's a good season with, the ceiling still being a possible national championship. So it's not a bad deal at all right there. And from Hook'em from Oklahoma Podcast, I see the comment. Wise from Arkansas, by the way. I'm glad you were able to steal one from out of they call that the hog pen up there in Arkansas. So way to go right there, keeping that orange spreading out up into Arkansas as well. Hope y'all are able to attend that game up in Fayetteville this year.
Ooh, yeah, that's going to be a wild one right there.
That game scares. That's the next scariest game besides the four that you said, CJ. That's the one that scares the heck out of me. I mean, I've been around a while. I understand. And I mean, the hatred back in the old Southwest Conference days, I mean, it's still strong. You go to Arkansas, you ask any Razorback, what team do you hate the most? They ain't played. I mean, we play them occasionally. They're going to tell you Texas. They will be ready to play. I promise you. That is a statement game for that staff and that program when we play them.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of there are some games on the schedule, and we didn't really experience this in the Big 12. And sometimes you did as a Texas fan, but there are some games on this SEC schedule that I really shouldn't be afraid of or anxious about that I'm freaking out about. And the Kentucky one is the one that I really don't have I shouldn't be freaking out about it, but I am. I'm randomly kind of freaking out about it. Just because I'm like, man, that one's just a weird. You said it about it, CJ. It's in a weird place on the schedule. And I keep having these kind of random visions in my head of Mark Stoops on a text chain with Bob Stoops, and Lincoln Riley's on that text chain too, coach. And so is Brent Venables. He's on that text chain. All the Bob Stoops disciples and Bob Stoops family. Hell, even Jeff Levy's probably on that text chain. Yeah. They all talk about how to beat Texas. Art Browse is probably in on that damn thing, and Kendall is in on it too. And it's all about, oh, how can we beat Texas? I'll give you some of my notes. This is what you should do against Texas. I'm sure that's not true. It's just my – but I know Bob Stoops is probably – he's probably – actually, that is true about Bob Stoops. But the rest of them, everybody else ain't know. It's just Bob Stoops reaching out to his brother, probably saying, hey, man, you should try this or do this. But that one worries me a little bit. The Kentucky one just covered. But the rest of them, you should be freaked out about Georgia. You should be freaked out about Michigan. Oklahoma, A&M, those are rivals. I'm with you, coach. Get used to it. Get freaked out about Arkansas. It's a rival for you young folks who ain't used to it. That's why coach freaked out about it. Coach old school, he knows. Oh, no, that ain't going to be no easy win down there, man. No. That's going to be wild. It's exciting, but, yeah, you're also more anxiety looking at the schedule than normal. Look at the SEC. And I like it. It's fun. It's fun having that kind of anxiety. It's good stuff. All right, last question before we get out of here, guys. Who are from Justin Rosenthal? Who are the teams that will air raid the most next year? I think given the secondary, that will be our biggest challenge. Yeah, you're right, Justin. Last year, randomly in the Big 12, a lot of air raid teams came back. I don't know what that was about. They went kind of back to the air raid. Oklahoma was running air raid. TCU had air raid-ish stuff. So did U of H was running air raid stuff. So, yeah, you're right. Tech, of course, was running air raid principles. So you could be right about that. They don't. I don't think they, CJ, that I can see in the SEC, many teams that are running the air raid. Also, what you won't see on the defensive side, you won't see a lot of the as much of the three high defense. You'll see it conceptually thrown out there. But remember, a lot of teams in the Big 12, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, TCU, that was literally their identity. It was their bread and butter. It was their go-to defensive personnel grouping or their defensive concept. That won't necessarily be the case, that the kind of the main strategic focus of some of those defense. So there are a lot of concepts that were, I think, really kind of they were really something you found in the ecosystem of the Big 12 more than other conferences. And they were, I think, kind of common to this, to the Big 12. I don't know if they're as common, and like air raid being one of them, as common in the SEC. You just won't see it as much.
Yeah, definitely not. And on this schedule for Texas specifically, you don't have to play the LSU, just won a Heisman with Jaden Daniels, airing the ball out all the time. Ole Miss, a little bit more of that Sarkisian offense as well. DeBoer, I mean, obviously, I think we can all agree, yeah, has an air raid, big time throw the ball down the field offense as well. Texas doesn't have to play those teams this year. Who on that roster or on that schedule right now does pose as the biggest threat for Texas in terms of an air raid offense to defend? In my eyes, it's Mississippi State. And again, that's Jeff Lebby coming in from Oklahoma. Yeah. That offense gave you a little bit of fits a year ago, right? He's going to be taking that same film, that same schematic approach over to Mississippi State for that game first week of SEC play for Texas. Aside from them, I don't think there are many teams this year. Of course, Georgia, kind of that pro-style offense. Arkansas, Texas A&M, I think they want to establish the run first. Obviously, yeah, we talked about Kentucky in the trenches. Their physical downhill style of running game as well, similar to Michigan. Texas play week two. I don't think Vanderbilt's going to scare you all too much. But of that group right now, it's going to be Georgia. It's going to be Mississippi State, and I think Oklahoma going down that tree in terms of philosophy on the offense side of the ball again after Lebby departed. It's going to be the two of them that put fear in you from a terms of offensive air raid.
Yeah, that's a good point, CJ, about the Jeff Lebby transition to Mississippi State. All right, gentlemen, thank you guys for the time. Thank you guys out there for participating in the show. Thank you guys for joining us. Really appreciate it. Always having fun here on The Winning Drive. Remember, we'll be back next Thursday from 4:15-ish to about 5:30. We'll be here to answer all your questions, talk about all the topics Longhorn related. Let me thank our sponsors once again. Thank you to South Point Dodge. Thank you to Flat Creek Estate. Thank you to Matthew behind the scenes. He's one of the hardest working members of the On Texas football team, so really appreciate him. And also thank you to Coach one more time. Thank you to CJ. We appreciate you guys. And until next time, hook 'em horns.
Y'all have a good one.
Te presentamos a Laura. Laura tiene muchos roles en su familia.
Mamá, esposa, maestra.
Y para prepararse para todos esos roles, Laura va a su Walmart.
Chofer nutricionista especialista en logística.
Ahí consigue vitaminas y medicinas para toda la familia.
Enfermera, doctora, paramédico.
Y ya que está ahí, también compra todos los ingredientes para la cena.
Chef personal, pastelera, malabarista.
Walmart tiene medicinas para la salud y bienestar de toda tu familia a precios bajos.
Consentidora, consejera, actriz de voz.
Bienvenido contable a tu tienda para todo. Bienvenido a tu Walmart.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.